Who here would like to be poor? Eventually. Okay. That's a wise guy answer. Okay. Who here would like to be rich? Ah, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Okay. And who here doesn't know what rich or poor is? Because I want to make sure everyone can answer. Okay. So we're going to discuss that from some different points of view. In chapter 21, the key story is a story about a great saint, Runty Dave. And Runty Dave had an interesting dilemma. Here's his view on this. He never endeavored to earn anything. He would enjoy whatever he got by the arrangement of providence. In other words, whatever came forth his way, he accepted as God's arrangement of providence. But when guests came, he would give them everything. He went along considerable suffering, along with the members of his family. Indeed, he and his family members shivered for want of food and water. Yet Runty Dave always remained sober. Once, after fasting for 48 days in some meditative fasting, in the morning Runty Dave received some water and foodstuffs made with milk and butter. But when he and his family were about to eat, a Brahmin guest came. Now, Runty Dave was like a character we might find. What was the name of Krishna's friend? Yeah, exactly. There is different natures for different folks. Or another way to put it, we have slokas. Slokas are Sanskrit verses. So we say different slokas for different folks. It's an old Hari Dayananda Maharaj quote. So different slokas. Excuse me? What verse am I reading from? Ah, oh yeah, 5. Well, we'll eventually get to another verse. I'm sorry about that. Okay. And Runty Dave perceived the presence of God everywhere. And in every living entity, he received the guests with faith and respect and gave him a share of his food. So he's about to eat, and the guest knocks at the door. And he says, okay, why don't you take half of it? And then, he'd been fasting for a long time. He was about to eat again, and this time, just like a worker stopped by. Sudra, they call it. Worker stopped by and said, I'm really hungry. So, okay. So, he gave him, divide the food in half and gave it to him. And then another guest arrived at the door and said, King, my dogs are hungry. Okay, take the rest. Finally, he says, okay, now I'll finally have my glass of water. And about to drink his glass of water, his fast included no water, which it's a very austere fast. And when the king was about to drink, a very kind of low-class person appeared, a person who main diet was eating dogs. Kind of a nasty thing. And he says, King, I'm really thirsty. He says, oh, King, offered him, talk to Runty Dave respectfully. Can I have a glass of water? And it wasn't the old days where you open the tap and get water. You had to go to a well and get water or whatever. That was a glass of water. He gave the glass of water away. Now, that is poor. That is poor. And Runty Dave sort of had a mood that we find in the Christian world. A mood exemplified by the mood of absorbing the suffering of others. And Runty Dave said, you know, kind of low-class guy came and asked for the water, he says, I don't pray for the eight perfections of yoga. I don't pray to be super powerful, nor for salvation, nor I just want to stay here and absorb the suffering of others so other people don't have to suffer. Kind of like we find Vasudev Dutta in the Chaitanya Charitamrita have a similar prayer. Now, we don't normally find folks with this prayer. For example, when I'm at the pharmacy, I don't see anyone sitting next to the pharmacist saying, I'd like to absorb your suffering for all the people coming to get their pills, and I'll take the suffering, and you don't need your pills, and, you know, everything will be fine. I'll take your suffering. I mean, I don't think like that. I don't think most of us would think like that, but some people do. Some very saintly people would think like that, and there's something to be said about it. Certainly, the mood of Christianity was Jesus Christ said, okay, I'll kind of try to absorb all this sin and whatever. So, Ronti Day said, by offering my water to the life of this poor person who is struggling to live, I feel that I'm free from all hunger and thirst. Actually, I feel okay. All moroseness, then he says, very interesting, distress, lamentation, illusion, they're gone. And then Runty Dave, although on the verge of death, 48 days, you could die from that, gave his own portion of water, and the king was naturally very kind and sober. Then, we'll pause here for a moment. Now, this was Runty Dave's mood. Now, we'll find out later that there's something very odd going on here. And people were playing a trick on Runty Dave. It was a very transcendentally nice trick. And we'll find out what that is in a moment, for those who don't know. So, the question I asked at the beginning of class, actually, all of this talking here has changed my mood. I feel funny asking for this, but I'm going to have to. Could somebody get me a glass of water? This is really strange. And if anyone else would like a glass of water, he'll get it for you too. Do you all like a glass of water? Anybody want a glass of water? Okay. I have to offer. Okay. What are all this talking here? So I am obviously not Runty Dave. Nor do I expect we have a lot of Runty Daves here, but some of us will have that mood. There are different moods. And what I mean by this is there are different... One of the key lessons here in this part of the Bhagavatam is we see many moods of folks engaged in bhakti yoga, the science of loving devotion. Thank you. Would you like a glass of water? Okay. Okay. And there is different moods. And one mood is just to really serve others. Another mood would be to lead others. For example, let's take a mayor, a president, a king, Colonel Gaddafi. Nah, bad example. But there is a mood where I want to lead others, and it's my nature. I'm a leader. Somebody else has a mood, I want to serve others. Somebody else has a mood that I want to make money. All of these, none of these, according to the view presented herein, are superior to another. That's a curiosity. We would think, I want to give everyone my water. That is superior to I want to make a lot of money. Is superior to, I just want to serve others in some way, or is superior to be, I want to be a teacher, is superior to, I want to be a lawyer. None of the points of view is superior or inferior. What's going on is it's the consciousness in which we do it. This is called the Varnashram system. It's a scientific system of dividing society, not by birth, but by qualifications and nature. So, for example, Runti Dave is setting the example of giving, which is inspiring to everyone. That was his nature. Somebody else may set the nature of being a great leader. Somebody else may set it of being a merchant. But let's say the merchant makes a lot of money. He's a senior hedge fund manager, in modern terms, makes a lot of money and uses it for good purposes. And in his own life, raises his consciousness and elevates his own consciousness by his own meditative practices. I mean, it's not. And somebody else is a king, or a leader, and he's like a Colonel Gaddafi. They're horrible. And somebody else is a leader. They do a great job. They really want to. I mean, I was very close friends with the previous mayor of Gainesville. Worked very closely with her for a decade, and she, in my opinion, observing her day in, day out, was an excellent mayor who worked at about a third the pay she gets now in private industry, pays very low, trying to think, what can we do to improve the town? And she actually thought like that. It was not inspiring to see. And then we get other leaders who, what can they do to improve their pockets? So the key presented here is a consciousness. And Runti Dave had a consciousness, and his consciousness was to serve others. That was his personal vow. Now, there is in modernity, we find there is an odd gospel that is taught in churches. And this is called the gospel of prosperity. Does anybody here know what that is? Have they heard of it? It's very common. 2006, it was the cover of Time magazine. Gospel of Prosperity. I'll read you about it. Gospel of Prosperity. This is from United Methodist Church, which doesn't quite believe in it. So that's their view. Then I'll read you what somebody who believes in it says. Gospel of prosperity is a belief that God wants Christians to be financially rich. It is promoted by many televangelists, and it appeals to people from various incomes. It confirms that wealth is proof, absolute proof, that God loves them. It's okay to pursue wealth, even to make it a top priority. It appeals to poor because it gets you a way out of poverty. Poor believers are doing something wrong. If you are poor, like Runti Dave, it is proof something's wrong with you. You ain't doing God's work, or devil got to you, or devil made you do it. It's a downward spiral. The poor do not love God enough. Or don't have enough faith. Faith, Lord, faith, faith. Or are not given enough money to support God's work. I saw one televangelist who went down into finance. Oh, televangelists? Televangelists, they go on TV and beg for money, and God will bless you. On Sunday morning, you'll see him on American television. And one televangelist went down in some scandal. So then he came. Many of them go down in sex scandals or financial scandals. So he went down, but then he came back. And first, he would appeal. He was a white guy. And he would appeal to, let's say, lower demographics, white people. But he kind of got thrown out of that ministry for financial scandal. And he said, okay, I know where I'm going to go. I'm going to appeal to low-class black people because they don't know about me yet. And he would go and tell people to borrow, beg, or steal their last dollar, send it to him, in God's name, and then God will give them whatever they need. And then you have a testimonial, like some poor church in Detroit. The roof was leaking. The building's about to be foreclosed. And the minister gathered every penny he could from his super poor congregation and sent him a check for $1,000. And now you see him in his brand new chapel. And everyone's driving a good car. Actually, I really saw that. This is not an exaggeration. And millions of people send the money. And there's so many of these. I mean, in America, especially in the South, they're quite popular. So let me quote you from one of these guys. I'll give you a quote, get a little education here. The belief that poverty produces holiness in a person and wealth is a curse does not come from God. These ideas are from who? The devil! The devil made me do it. It is the devil's way for us to remain poor. Even in the old times, God's will for his people is to prosper. And then he quotes from John. If you are a businessman, you will notice God gives you unique ideas for your company so that it may prosper. If you're an employee, God gives you promotion. And he quotes from the Old Testament. In this way, Jacob became rich. He became the owner of large flocks. He also had many male and female servants. And he had many camels and donkeys, too. If you really want wealth, you get it from God. And if you're really kind of get it right, usually get it right for these evangelists means give me your money, you'll be successful. So you have different gospels. So you have a gospel of poverty. You have a gospel of wealth. What's the gospel of poverty? Anybody familiar with that? Gospel of poverty. Gospel of poverty. That the poor, the poor shall inherit the earth? Right? In India, this is known as what? The Hridaya Narayan. The Hridaya Narayan is interesting. It means that God is in the poor person. Who was a big force behind that philosophy? What's that? Vivekananda. Yeah, Vivekananda. And later on, Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi's interesting because I studied Mahatma Gandhi in my old anti-war days because, you know, he's brilliant on nonviolence. But in India, somebody said something very wise to me. Among the politicians, Gandhi is the saint. Among the saints, he's the politician. There's some aspect to that. You've heard that before, Ollie? That one? Oh, okay. So, anyway, with all appreciation to Gandhi, there is some aspect to that. So the Hridaya Narayan says that you find God only in the poor people. So if somebody's really poor, that's where you find God. Like, for example, if I really, really want to find where God is sitting, I should right now leave this place, go to St. Francis House, the homeless shelter, and those people who are there, that is where I will find God. Now, the Gita has a different version. The Gita says, yes, you can find God there, and you can find God here, and you can find God everywhere. I mean, you can find that spark of divinity everywhere. It's not just in the poor people. So saying to find in the poor people is the gospel of only the poor people, exclusively is the gospel of poverty. Now, there's nothing wrong. I mean, in fact, do you guys know who the largest donor to St. Francis House is in the city of Gainesville? Anybody know? Krishna House. We're the largest donor because we give 25,000 leftover meals a year. So we're the single largest donor. Nobody in town knows that, in my duties with the city, I was had a debate for hours how many people is St. Francis House allowed to feed. There's a controversy about that, and I had a chair of the board that was debating that issue. And so many people came forth. They donate. And people come. Well, we're in favor of it. There's so much we give. We dwarfed them all. I didn't really say anything about that then, but we did dwarf them all. But is God only found in the poor people? It's kind of, the philosophy has the same flaw that God is only found in wealth. We will now move on to the verse that will discuss where God is found and what this means, or God or higher consciousness, the divinity. We can use these terms liberally. So what happened with Runty Dave? Well, it turns out that these great demigods, these might say angels of the universe came, and they had all took disguise, and one was the Brahmin, one was the dog eater, one was the poor man, and they all came to trick Runty Dave because he was so pious they were just playing a little joke on him and to demonstrate how great he was. And Runty Dave was a pure devotee, always Krishna conscious. I'm on verse 17. Free from all material desires, free from illusion, and actually in an absolute connectivity with the world. He understood how the world worked. Illusion did not impact him. In 18, all those who followed the principles of Runty Dave were totally favored by his mercy and became pure devotees. So now what's going on here is the discussion is the nature of this world is very divided. We see distinctions. For example, we will see male, female, male, male Indian, and we can go down and we have one, we got a male Japanese in the corner, and I think we have a Hispanic and woman, and we have, what else we have, other women? What's that? Malaysian? Okay, Malaysian. Okay, so we have a collecting Christian, Jews. I think there's seven Muslims here. No, okay. You're welcome too. So these are the distinctions, and the distinctions are real. I mean, if I start walking into the women's room, people kind of get a little get disturbed with me. You know, I mean, there's some useful. These distinctions have a place and time, you know. There's a time and place for it. But if the distinction becomes my reality and we lose the unity behind the diversity, then we end up with exactly the modern world with all the troubles we have. It's the number one disease in the world. The number one disease is skin disease. Now, I don't mean Florida where the number one disease is skin cancer. And the very richest doctors in America are the Florida dermatologists. But that's another matter. By the skin disease, I specifically am referring to identifying ourselves as this body. Not that identity, you know, I can pretend I'm not this body, yet it's that identification that's the issue. Overly identifying. And that's very difficult to overcome. Krishna says in the Gita, this world consisting of three modes of nature is difficult to overcome, but those who surrender me can easily cross it. And Runty Dave had that quality that he was not illusioned by the distinctions within the world. So, the best yogi is described as the one who, with great faith, worshiping the Lord in transcendental service, is most intimately united with the Lord in yoga and is the highest of all. So the best yogi is described in verse 18 as he who constantly thinks of the Supreme Lord within the core of his heart. Runty Dave, he was actually a king who lived a very austere life. I really didn't explain that part before. He was actually himself, not just addressed as a king, but he actually was a king who lived a very austere life. I was visiting Slovenia last year and doing some programs there, and they had this amazing... Anybody been to Slovenia? Yeah. You been there? Ljubljana. What a beautiful country. Never seen anything so beautiful. It's an old part of Yugoslavia, right next to Venice, Italy. And They never had the wars of Yugoslavia. They're more of a homogeneous Catholic country. They didn't have the Muslim invasion stopped in Bosnia from the that kind of divided Europe up. So they never had the Muslim Christian, and then they didn't have the Orthodox Eastern-Western church fighting, which is very prominent in Yugoslavia. Is like the crossroads. That's where World War I started. I mean, it's kind of like the crossroads of Europe. And they never had that. So it's kind of a peaceful place. Every town, it's a hilly country. So you go out, and as you go to each town, the highest place in each town is the church, an old church in the town square. They have very little war there, so the building's very old, very beautiful. And while I was there, the president of the country was this really super intellectual who lived as a monk. He lived in a cabin alone in the woods without a telephone, but he did have an internet connection because he was president of the country. And he'd go to his office where there was all facility, but for weekends at night, he'd go off and live without anybody in just his cabin in the woods. And he would start every day meditating. He was actually vegetarian. And he brought the country into the European Union, which everyone thought was impossible to do. A brilliant, brilliant guy. And he lived a life kind of like a Runty Dave. I mean, he just lived this great, admirable life. He was loved as president, by the way. He spoke English very well, and I heard him give a speech in English. And I was saying, wow, can I bring him home? So Runty Dave was a king, but what he wanted is all the residents of the state to rise to a higher consciousness. And he set the best example himself. So he is what's known as a Mahabhagavat, or a first-class devotee. The demigods did a little trick on him, just to kind of show his greatness on one hand, and then to teach a lesson about the gospel of poverty and the gospel of wealth. And the Bhagavatam version, here we have a king who gave up his wealth to live simply, but he wasn't advocating that everyone should be poor. He wasn't advocating Dharidra Narayan. Nor was he advocating that if you serve God, you will be rich. What he's advocating is by the process of bhakti yoga, you will get one thing. What will you get? What's that? Happiness? What would you get? Peace? What else? What's that? Love of God. What else would you get? Satisfaction. Okay. Satisfaction. That was, what was that song? I can't get no satisfaction. You don't know that one. Okay. You guys know that one? Yeah, of course you do. Okay. So satisfaction. Anybody want to sing it for him? Okay, never. Okay. So what's saying, and a lot of things, I'm going to put it in my words. What do you get? You get understanding, knowledge. If I understand that every one of you is part of the divine spark, and I understand I'm not this body, and I really understand it, not just theoretically, but actually can act on it, and I understand what my connection with the cosmos is, you can't get anything else. You talk about happiness. Why did, during the Holocaust, some prisoners of war in the concentration camps survive and others died? Anybody know? What studies have been done? Why some made it and some didn't? Yes? Maybe they did. That's not what the studies told. Yes. Yeah, and often through connection to God. I mean, the most kind of religious, but they kind of, and they ended, and if you read about their descriptions, their self-descriptions, they entered kind of a meditative state. We're not this body. They can't do anything to me. They can only smash the body. And when they had that realization, they became survivors. And those who are very attached to their body actually end up losing their body. Now, doesn't mean that that would, you know, somebody was in a good state of consciousness, maybe they went in the gas chamber anyway. That's a different story of karma and why that happened. I mean, there's different stories of why that happened. That's for another topic. The question of theodicy, of why does evil happen, is a good question. You know, we certainly discuss that. But in other words, the one thing, we can control external forces very well. We think we all can, but to some degree. For example, you might get a flu shot. You still might get the flu. And you might not get a flu shot. You might, you know, I mean, doctors say you should get a flu shot. Probably you should get a flu shot. But that doesn't mean you're not going to get sick. The external forces, you can adjust, but you can't really control. You can have annoying people. Annoying people. I mean, does anybody know somebody who really annoys them? You do. Yeah, okay, it's good. Yeah. Really annoys you, no end. So, I mean, you can let it bother you. Sometimes you're in a situation where you can't do anything about it. You can let it bother you, or you can kind of rise above it. And sometimes, especially in, I have to go to North Dakota soon. It's 8 degrees. Here I am in Florida. What the heck am I doing in North Dakota? 8 degrees, but I can't control the weather. And then in Florida this summer, I'll wish I was in North Dakota. So there's influences like that we can't control. To some degree we can. We can turn on our air conditioner. We can do something to some degree. And to some degree we just can't control it. But what we always, always can control is our consciousness. And if our consciousness can actually be connected with the supreme consciousness, which Runty Dave's was, in any situation, even losing our last glass of water, we can be peaceful. So that's some of the topics discussed here, that it's not good to be poor, it's not good to be rich, it's good to have good consciousness. And in some cases, we may raise that good consciousness by doing great austerities and poverty. In some cases, we may raise that consciousness by... one of my members of the Krishna movement and a dear friend of mine is Henry Ford's great-grandson. So he lives in Gainesville. His neighbors are Urban Meyer and Billy Donovan, to give some idea. Everyone knows who they are. Or everyone used to know who Urban Myers was. Next year, no one will know. But anyway, he certainly was born into a wealthy situation. And it's a great austerity for him. He said when he was growing up, his mother used to say to him, his mother would say, "No one will ever love you. They just want your money." And he says, it's very tough growing up that way. I mean, you know, money has never been a problem for him, except when Ford almost went bankrupt, but they've come roaring back, and his fortunes are roaring back. And when he met Prabhupada, he knew there was something wrong with this. It was funny that I read a few biographies of the Ford family because I know them. And the family, up until Bill Ford, who's chairman of the board now, is a pretty decent guy in all regards, kind of intelligent, but most of them were alcoholics, nutcases, weirdos, couple of biographies of the Ford family mentioned Alfred Ford, Ambarish, the Godbrother of the Hare Krishna movement, and he said he's probably the most sane, happiest one of the whole family, and he's in a cult. But he described how difficult it was. Yet, I mean, his own life is simply a life of service. And he has some real ambitions of service, and that's what he does. And sure, when he flies, he'll fly first class. It's even expected of him. It's not an issue. But wealth is not a blessing or a curse. It's something to do something with. It's the consciousness that counts. So we'll stop here and have a few minutes for any questions, comments, criticisms, jokes. Anybody have any questions? Any of you have any questions? You have? There are guests. Yes. Doctor, what is your question? He's a doctor of... technically, what are you a doctor of?
In theology.
Theology. Doctor of theology from Oxford. He's teaching at the University of Florida.
Thank you very much for your very insightful lecture. So your point was that the... we don't pursue neither wealth nor poverty, right? But our goal is to raise our consciousness, and then whatever facility which is required for that purpose, we are entitled to have, I guess. So the question is, how in practical life, like day-to-day life, in terms of career choice, and then also where to live, how to live. So how do we decide what's appropriate to us? Because, just the mind can easily trick you. But at the same time, I don't want to ask my spiritual master, should I live in an apartment with the $300 with broken shower, or should I live in apartment with the $1,000 per month with the nice shiny kitchen? Which one should I live? I don't think I want to ask.
So your question. So let me first answer your question. Okay, I'll give you the briefest answer I can. Yes. Okay, we'll go on to the next question. I've used that joke too many times. Okay, so it's actually a very good question. The question is, okay, I've come to some theoretical conclusion that consciousness is more important than anything else. I'm not rejecting material facility necessarily, not accepting it, but I have a lot of choices to make.